Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi is trying to launch his country into the future, apparently, by turning the page all at once on the instability of the Arab Spring. He's working at a rapid pace and trying even harder to restore prosperity. Hosni Mubarak, for instance, was once a criminal blamed for killing protesters in Tahrir Square and looting his own country, a discredited dictator sick and humiliated in an Egyptian prison. Now all charges have been dropped against former President Hosni Mubarak and his two sons. Current President al-Sisi says he's also considering the release of one of three Al Jazeera journalists jailed in Egypt, the news agency says, for more than 300 days. The journalists have been accused of spreading false news. Peter Gresty, who turns 49 today, is from Australia. His parents are in Cairo, making a personal appeal to President al-Sisi, and they say they're hopeful their son will be released and home before the end of the year. David Kirkpatrick joins me, Cairo bureau chief for our partner, The New York Times. Welcome, David.
It's good to talk to you.
There is lots to talk about here. The reaction to Mubarak's, I don't know whether to call it an exoneration. You know how the process works there. He certainly wasn't pardoned by al-Sisi. The courts did something here.
The courts didn't quite exonerate him. They found technicalities. They chose to avoid ruling on the main questions in front of them, one involving corruption and the other involving allegations that he directed the killing of unarmed protesters who had been challenging his rule. And really, this is the conclusion of a trial that was a farce to begin with. The charges themselves were very politicized and appeared hastily cooked up to try to appease the public anger in the aftermath of his overthrow. Now, of course, times have changed. We have a new military strongman in the presidential palace, Mr. Sisi. There's evidently no appetite among the current government to prosecute Mr. Mubarak. In fact, many of Mr. Sisi's advisors were previously Mr. Mubarak's advisors. So times have changed, and in all likelihood, he is now going to go free. The drive to hold him accountable for his 30 years in power has really dissipated.
And that includes the feet on the street, even though there were demonstrations.
I would not say that includes the feel on the street. The feel on the street is much more mysterious now than it used to be, because there is no longer the freedom to demonstrate or to express your opinion. Certainly, opinion on the street is at best very divided. Opinion in the media was unanimous in support of the government and echoing the refrain, "It's time to move on." And that tells you everything.
And is this doing Mubarak a favor, or is this really an attempt to pull a Gerald Ford and try to, you know, pull the nation out of its, long national nightmare?
There's a third way to look at it, which is that if Mubarak and his cronies and securities forces were to be found guilty of corruption in these instances or of killing protesters in the other instances, that would, by extension, be a conviction of the now ruling regime. You know, the people who were running Mubarak's security forces are now running Sisi's security forces. The people who were advising Mubarak on matters of the economy and public ethics are now doing the same for Sisi. So they have a lot to lose if there were, for example, a kind of truth and reconciliation committee looking into the Mubarak years. It would almost certainly end up looking into the Sisi years, and nobody wants that. So some of it is, let's give the old man a break. He wasn't so bad. Some of it is, we missed the stability. Some of it is, it's time to move on. And some of it is, you know, we've got our skin in the game here, and we don't want it to go on any further.
And that last issue suggests that there is a crackdown, or at least a greater degree of control being exercised in Cairo. And I'm wondering if that's having a radicalizing effect on people like the Muslim Brothers, who were once in power, who are now, illegal again. And what is the impact of all the radicalization that's going on in the region, Syria and Iraq, for instance, ISIS? Any suggestion that those forces and those sentiments are moving into Egypt?
You know, the real Muslim Brotherhood true believers, the million or so people who have been indoctrinated thoroughly by the Brotherhood and attended its cell meetings and so forth, they pretty much are committed to nonviolence. That's the ideology of the group. Now, there's a much larger number of people who applauded the election of an Islamist and who might have Islamist sympathies, and some of them may be radicalized. We do now have a very active militant group based primarily in the northern Sinai but spreading across the country, previously called Ansar Beit al-Maqdis, but just this month, they have decided to affiliate themselves with the Islamic State, the extremists who call themselves the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, formerly ISIS. The folks here in the Sinai now call themselves the Sinai province of the Islamic State. So they're very clearly affiliating themselves, I think, in the hope of getting weapons and financial support. But even without that, they've been doing a pretty good job of killing quite a few soldiers and police. The government is really struggling to tamp down their terrorist activities. Ansar Beit al-Maqdis, the Sinai province, is hoping this is the beginning of a long insurgency. And they may be right. It's too soon to tell.
Is that insurgency concentrated in the Sinai, or are they striking in larger urban centers where people would see their impact?
Occasionally they're striking in Cairo, but their main pocket of strength is in the northern Sinai. They've also staged some rather large attacks in the western desert. Last night they claimed responsibility for killing an American oil worker. They tried to carjack him for his desert-ready SUV and killed him in the process. So it doesn't appear to have been the targeting of an American, and yet they're now flashing around the passport they took when they killed him, which is likely to unnerve people. The prognosis is not great for extinguishing the insurgency right away, in part because they have porous borders in the east with the Gaza Strip and in the west with Libya, and they have like-minded, well-armed Islamist confederates on both sides. So there's a lot of ugly stuff flowing in and out of Egypt from both ends right now, and it makes the picture anxiety-making for those of us who live here.
So let's end on that then. You've talked about porous borders. Is there the prospect, and do people speak openly about the idea that there will be a green light passage from ISIS sympathizers in Libya, ISIS sympathizers in Egypt, through the Gaza Strip into Jordan and Syria and all the way into Iraq and the border of Iran?
They don't speak about it. That is the world we live in. It's clear that a number of Egyptians, probably in the hundreds, but we don't know how many, has made their way probably through Libya or the Sinai over to fight in Syria. Have some of them come back? Probably. Will some of them bring back weapons or money? Who knows? But it's known that before the extremists here in the Sinai formally affiliated with the Islamic State in Syria, a delegation of Sinai militants made their way all the way to Raqqa in Syria to negotiate that arrangement. So there's definitely contact and traffic between the groups and around the region.
If you can talk about it, does the New York Times discourage or actually ban reporters from going into Syria at this point?
We don't have a stated policy on that, but I think all the reporters and all the editors would like us to stay in good health. So we have to choose our reporting trips very carefully in that area. I know we have standing efforts by several correspondents to obtain visas to Damascus from the Assad government, and I think we're probably keeping an eye on whether and when it would be safe to venture over the border from Turkey as well.
That said, you noted some personal anxiety a moment ago. Do you think it's possible that someone from Egypt, from the Western Press Corps, might be pulled and become a detainee and eventually end up in one of these ISIS videos?
No, I think there's no chance of that whatsoever. But at the same time, we're living in a situation here in Cairo where quite a few improvised explosive devices go off all the time, recently targeting public transportation. So what worries me is not that some extremists from the Sinai are going to deliberately kidnap me. It's more that in the effort to cause mayhem or target a police official, they might do damage to me or people who I care about.
David Kirkpatrick, Cairo Bureau Chief for our partner, The New York Times. Thanks so much, David, as always.
Good talking to you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.